Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment.
Proper instrument this week, I guess you found it. Welcome to GGB episode 53, Holy Family University at Virginia State University. We are recording this on March 3rd, but this is actually from last weekend. I'm trying to look on my calendar where this is. This would have been, 24th of February. Seems like a while ago.
The day after my birthday.
It was the day after your birthday, yeah. It was a busy weekend, actually, that weekend. So, there's a lot going on Friday night, obviously, because it was your birthday. Then we headed down to VSU. We were supposed to go to VSU a couple of weeks earlier, and I just didn't feel well that weekend. I was like, yeah, I'm not driving down there, because we had a lot planned. And actually, we couldn't get to the battlefields. We didn't have enough time, and I know you wanted to do that anyway. As it was, we had plenty of time this week. Mason had to get to school at 7 o'clock to support. I don't think he was wrestling. I think he was supporting somebody from our school who had made states. So they were taking a team to go and do that. So I was like, shoot, we're going that way anyway, like an hour and a half later or whatever. Why don't we just go? You were up anyway, so it didn't make any difference. I did put one thing in my notes because I didn't want to forget. I did these notes last week, actually. Where do we stop for breakfast?
Waffle House.
And one of our traditions at Waffle House is I have a dollar, I pick four Waffle House songs. You have a dollar, you pick four Waffle House songs. Didn't quite work that way this time, JJ. How come?
Because there was already a bunch of credits inside. So we had 35 credits.
I didn't notice. I put my $2 in and I was like, 35? I was like, and then I suggested to you it would be kind of funny if, and then you were like, yeah, I'm going to do it. So I picked 8 songs because I knew that gave you a lot. And then what did you do?
Then I played a bunch of random Waffle House songs. And with 10 left, I played Raisins on My Toast 10 times.
That was my suggestion. It's kind of a louder one, so you can hear it. Raisins on My Toast. It's just that voice. I like the song, but I wouldn't want to hear it 10 times in a row. They can switch the songs over. Now, I don't know if you know this story. I'm sure Mason does.
Oh, wait, was it the South Carolina?
It's in South Carolina. Yeah. This is, Mommy and I went to spring break. This is just before we were married. And we traveled down all the way to Florida for spring break. And we stopped, I think we had Waffle House almost every meal on one day. I think we had breakfast, lunch, and dinner there. And I picked some of those songs, and the sheriff was obviously familiar there. He was going behind the back and just serving himself drinks. And he jokingly threatened me, don't put any more songs on. I was like, all right. He did not like those. So I don't know. I would rather have songs than not have any songs if I'm working, though.
Yeah.
I would have thought, but I don't know. All right, what did you have then? I guess it's pretty obvious.
A waffle.
You had a waffle.
Bacon.
Yeah.
And syrup.
Uh-huh. I got the hash browns all the way, and I looked it up because I can never remember what it is. All I remember is it's got everything on. And she was like, do you want chili and gravy? I was like, heck yeah, of course I do. So the world-famous golden delicious hash browns with grilled onions, melted American cheese, hickory smoked ham, diced tomatoes, jalapeno peppers, and grilled mushrooms, and then topped with Burt's chili and sausage gravy. Oh my gosh, it's so good. Burt's chili. I don't know
who Burt's... Burt's chili bowl.
No, that's Ben's chili ball.
Oh,
that's a slightly different one.
Oh, wait, Bert's the guy who made it.
I would assume it was Ben, but I don't know.
Bert.
Anyway, it kind of worked because it was like halfway down to the battlefields. So we drove about an hour, had breakfast, drove to the battlefields, at which time the battlefields just about opened. I think it was 9:15. I think they open at like 9 a.m. Now, I mentioned on this one, this is not like a specific battle. It was more a case of this went on for nearly a year, and you were like, oh, I already know about this, so you must have learned about it in school. All right,
well,
for people who don't know about it, do you want to tell us about the Siege of Petersburg?
I knew about it, like, in third grade.
Okay. You knew a little bit about it, obviously.
I saw it on YouTube.
Oh, I thought you said you learned it at school. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So, the Siege of Petersburg was a series of battles around Petersburg, Virginia, fought from June 9, 1864 to March 25, 1865. during the American Civil War. The campaign consisted of 9 months of trench warfare, in which the Union, commanded by Lieutenant General Ulysses S. Grant.
I'm hoping you recognize that that future president's name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Assaulted Petersburg unsuccessfully and then constructed trench lines that eventually extended over 30 miles from the eastern outskirts of Richmond, Virginia, to around the eastern and southern outskirts of Petersburg. Petersburg was a crucial to the supply of Robert E. Lee's army and the Confederate capital of Richmond.
Numerous raids were conducted and battles fought in attempts to cut off the Richmond and Petersburg Railroad. Many of these battles caused the lengthening of the trench lines. Lee finally gave in to pressure and abandoned both cities in April 1865, leading to his retreat and the surrender at Appomattox Courthouse, which I think we're going to try and get to at some point. I know you've mentioned it a few times. The Siege of Petersburg foreshadowed the trench warfare that would be seen 50 years later in World War I, earning it a prominent position in military history. Those were taken from Wikipedia. I don't remember them mentioning that anywhere at the...
Well, Wikipedia is...
I think that's accurate.
You can change Wikipedia.
I think that's accurate. I haven't heard that. I don't remember trench warfare. When I think of trench warfare, I think of World War One. I hadn't really thought about it at the time, that would probably pre-shadow it, and they were like, oh, this works.
I kind of know more about trench warfare in World War One because of the Germans.
Of course.
Because, they used to just put a bunch of gas in the front lines.
World War's a little bit bigger than the city of Petersburg.
Yes.
That's probably why I know a little bit more about it. Now, we looked around. We did the first area. We kind of walked up, did a quick look around. There were some cannons. We watched a little introductory video. There was a visitor center you could walk around as well. And then we did the driving tour. Driving tour was amazing because I was like, oh, hold on. Am I going to be able to find it? It was just a single road. Like, you literally followed the road, got to different stops. We got out, took some pictures at different places. I was going to ask you if you can remember any French. There was a couple of French. I can't remember what it was either. Banquette, which was a small
baguette.
It wasn't baguette. I was thinking bank because I thought it was to do with like a bank, as in a. I'm trying to show a hill right now to
Jay.
They said it was a small bench.
It was like a trench.
A small trench? I thought he said it was a small bench, as in something you sit on.
Wait, no. A banquette is kind of like a little raised part.
Okay. All right. So it's not a literal seat then.
No.
Okay. All right. Well,
it's kind of shaped like a bench.
I didn't read the sign. Some of the stops had limited stuff. It was just talking about things that happened at that area.
My favorite one was the third one because it had a bunch of stuff.
I was about to say that one. Yeah. Some of the buildings had been reconstructed, but the actual defenses were still there. You can walk on the, what are they called? Earthworks?
Yeah.
Obviously you couldn't work on that because I want people trying them down. But yeah, you could kind of get a good feel for what it was like. I thought it was cool. My favorite part though, actually, was the last stop, which was the tunnel. They showed you how they tunnel to try and break the siege. Yeah. They did a 50-foot, must have been 500 feet.
Yeah,
500 feet underneath, tunnel. Got to the side, and then big bomb, boom.
They put a bunch of gunpowder at the end, and then just exploded it.
So you could see the entrance to the tunnel, but I didn't think you'd be able to go through it, but it was kind of cool that you could still kind of see it, and I thought your favorite thing was probably the fact that they had, normally you have picture boards, but this actually had audio as well. You could push a button, and
I ran to get everyone.
And after we'd listened to them, for some reason you pressed it for a second time, but hey, it was solar powered, so you weren't wasting energy, I guess, thank goodness.
It's because it was way too far out.
Yeah, it was nowhere near. Yeah, the visitor center. But no, I thought it was pretty cool. And we were actually there longer than I thought we were going to be. I didn't think it would be that long at all. And actually, as we were leaving, I was like, we need to head up to the stadium. I thought the game actually started at 12, and I could have sworn it was 12, unless that was the Sunday game. I don't know. And anyway, when we finally got there, it was like, no, you're too early. It's like 1 o'clock, so we kind of went, and then we went for lunch, and then we came back. But do you want to tell us about VSU then, JJ?
Virginia State University was founded in 1882 as the Virginia Normal and Collegiate Institute, making it the first full state supported four-year institution of higher learning for blacks in America.
So you asked me when we were there, because you were knowing I did my research, you were like, so does this have any significance, this one? I was like, you're going to have to wait and find out. So yeah, obviously a very important institution at that time.
Oh, also, I figured out why Langston Hall there is called that, but
oh, you did?
But I forgot why. It was, I think it was,
well, I can, if you want to try thinking about it.
It's because we learned about it in class.
Oh, okay. I can tell you about
it. And that was
on
Friday.
So one of my co-workers, last name is Foster, and we went past a hall that said Foster Hall. And I was like, it's not him, because Foster's such a common last name. I think I told you, he goes to watch basketball games at VSU, and he said that he played baseball at the stadium. I don't know if I don't think he went to VSU. Anyway, when I saw him the week, he was like, oh yeah, he's like, that's that building's named after my, I can't remember if it was granddad or great-granddad. So yeah, one of his relatives, it was named after him. So I was like, oh, that's really cool. I didn't have that written down in my notes because that was afterwards, but I was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. All right, the last part says, today Virginia State University is one of Virginia's two land-grant institutions. Whaley Colbert Field, that's the baseball stadium, opened in 1997 and was named after Whaley M. Colbert, a Chesterfield County supervisor and one of the founders of the Ettrick Youth Sports Association. So I thought this was Petersburg, but when you look on the website and it tells you the location, it actually says Ettrick. So I'm guessing that's like a suburb of Petersburg, probably. VSU has won more CIAA baseball titles, 23, than any other school in the CIAA. It won recent championships in 2004, 2007, 2008, 2009. I'm saying that's not that recent, Jason. That's you weren't even 2009? Born for any of those. That's 15 years ago. So I don't know. Perhaps this article was written a while ago. When the newly formed CIAA conference opened in 1924, the Trojans, that's their nickname, won the first ever CIAA baseball championships. Now, for the alumni, there was a few people on here that was like, oh, these are kind of cool. Some that have a connection to JGB as well. The first one was James LaRue Avery, an American actor, was best known for his role as Uncle Philip in Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I'd forgotten he died in 2013. I'd totally forgotten about that, but I never watched Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but I knew who that character was straight away. All right, who do you have?
I have Alonzo Benjamin Bunbury, born in April 21st, 1947.
Uh-huh.
Is an American former Major League Baseball outfielder who played for the Baltimore Orioles and San Diego Padres from 1972 through 1988.
You're about to say he played in the Civil War for a minute. Uh-huh.
Bunbury was the 1973 ALRY
American League
Rookie of the Year.
Can you not read American for some reason?
I had to abbreviate it.
You were trying to say AL. You could have said ROY as well for Rookie of the Year. That's the thing. So why is Alonzo, or Al as we know him better, why is that a connection to JGB?
The first episode.
Yeah, he was at the Play Ball event.
Go watch that.
I don't know, you can watch it. You can certainly listen to it. Yeah. No, I got you a card of Al at Bunbury as well afterwards, because I didn't know who he was at the time, because obviously he won the Rookie of the Year before even I was born, so I certainly wasn't watching the Orioles that time. And the last one I got, I deliberately gave you Al so I could have this person as well. Gladys Mae West Nee Brown was born in 1930, is an American mathematician. She is known for her contributions to mathematical modeling of the shape of the Earth and her work on the development of satellite geodesy models that were later incorporated into GPS. West was inducted into the United States Air Force Hall of Fame in 2018. So yeah, there's some pretty cool people who actually went there. So, like I said, we went for lunch, we came back. There was quite a few people there, actually, when we returned. There wasn't many people when we got there, because we were there an hour and 15 minutes before it started. There was a small bleacher section that you could sit at behind home plate, but you could get really close to the action. And there was a bleacher slightly to the left on the wayside, and there was a bleacher on the first base side, which would have been the home field. And there was people set up with tents as well. There was individualized tents.
There was, pods.
Pods,
like,
yeah.
There was little pods.
Some in the outfield, and... Yeah. All right, do you want to tell us about the game?
Okay.
Oh, can you tell us about the game? Yeah, you got it.
First inning, it was 3-0 Holy Family.
Mm-hmm.
University. In the second inning, it was 3-1 Holy Family University. In the fifth inning, it was 4-2 Holy Family. In the sixth, it was 5-2 Holy Family. And in the sixth, in the seventh, it was 6-2 Holy Family.
And that was the final score. With it being a doubleheader, it was just a seven-inning game. We took a walk around the stadium. Not around the stadium, around the campus. Probably around
the stadium.
We did have a look around the stadium as well, yeah. The football stadium was adjacent. Actually, the other thing we were watching, probably more than the baseball, they had a crane out.
The light.
Yeah, they were fixing the lights. Because I was like, why are all the lights on? Like, it was a little dark, and we knew it was... it looked dark enough that it could rain, but yeah, he was fixing them, and that was fascinating to watch. Because we kept saying, oh, look, he's got to that one right now. But yeah, we're probably around the... It might have been the end of the fifth that we actually decided, let's have a look around the campus. You saw the letters, first of all. You were like, oh, look, these are VSU letters. Should we go get a picture? So we did. They also had the fraternity hall? Yeah, so anyway, they had lots of little pictures and mosaics and stuff. So I was taking lots of pictures, and we saw some sort of tower at the end of the road. So we walked up that way, and then we came back. And then by the time we came back, we saw Holy Family tag on another. We saw they'd already tagged on another run. So yeah, it was top of the seventh. It was 5-2. And actually, we should have said it was 5 hits each. So although the score was 6-2, it was actually close in terms of number of hits. Virginia State made one error. Winning pitcher was Bing, and losing pitcher was Joseph Hastings. And it was actually, I think, Virginia State's... They were supposed to play somebody, and I think one of their games got cancelled as well. So I think this was their second, actually, game at home. And, yeah, once we kind of Oh, there was a nice area where you could play in, like, behind the first base side.
Yeah, and I found a baseball.
Shocker. But the players were really good at coming out and getting the balls. Like, you always try and see if you can get a ball. No chance. Those players were good.
I was throwing the ball, mm-hmm. the baseball, on the something yard dash. I don't know how many.
40, possibly. I think it was just to the side. I don't think it was a full track, so I think it was just for the footballers. So I think it was 40. Yeah.
It may have been, 30. Because I don't really know.
Oh, that was it?
Yeah.
Anyway, so at the seventh... Now, it started to rain at different points as well, and it wasn't supposed to. It was a very low chance of rain. But you could see it was getting dark. So at the top of the seventh, we were... Actually, we saw... Actually, that was when we got back. We got back at the middle of the seventh. And we saw it was 6-2, and I was like, I don't think that they're coming back. And it started to rain. So we started to walk back to our car, and at that point, somebody hit a foul ball, and it went onto the road right pretty close to where we were. You got a ball, and I think you said you found 30 cents as well.
Yeah.
And anyway, you relayed the ball to me, and I threw it back over the fence so the guys didn't have too far to go. And we could still listen and watch the game as we were walking back to our car. And as we got back to the car, that was when the final out was. And it did start to rain kind of heavy at that point.
Yeah, when we pulled out, it started, pouring.
Yeah, the game time was only 2 hours, so it started at 1, finished at 3. We kind of needed to leave anyway, because we'd already looked at a few other things to do, and you said that you wanted to get to them. So one of them was the Keystone Truck and Tractor Museum. It encompasses more than 125,000 square feet. Keystone is no ordinary museum. Their website says, come experience the last century of agricultural heritage, incorporating fully restored antique farm tractors, ongoing restoration projects, and other farm-related equipment. Keystone offers visitors more than the farm, with a time warp of antique road trucks, classic cars, vintage gas pumps, oil cans, automotive signage, clocks, advertising posters of yesteryear, and so much more. Now, when I saw the picture, I saw one room which looked big. And when we got there, the guy was like, have you been here before? And was like, no. And he's kind of... And he was like, yeah, we got like 3 more rooms equally as big as this. I was like, oh my gosh. So we were... It was a lot bigger than I realized it was. Any highlights for you? Any particular vehicles that stood out for you? Or any signs? Or
I got to sit in the tractor.
You did wonder. You're like, am I? I said, I don't think... I said, they'll probably have one. And there was. It was a nice John Deere. We got some pictures of that.
I remember another thing. The chair in the workshop.
The cow chair. I don't remember that.
The cow chair?
No.
The cow chair.
I don't remember that
so
at all.
So they had like a little workshop next to the gas station.
Okay, I remember seeing it, but I don't think
there was a car
Yeah.
And then on the back left, like, there was a cow chair.
Oh, actually, you know
on
what?
The top, it was a cow print.
I kind of do half remember that, I think, yeah. Yeah. They had some old toys, they had some old food products. I remember they had a very old Mountain Dew. Like, those look really different.
They were playing checkers with car nuts. Or like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, I'm trying to remember what, there was one strange shaped car, and it was used as advertising promotions, but I can't remember what it actually looked like now. Man, there was so much to see there.
It was in the shape of a bottle.
Yeah, that would make sense.
And there was also one with, like, a weird thing out in the front. Like, it was just, like, a weird thing jetting out in the front.
I do remember there was one truck that had a pig in on the back of it. But that it wasn't a real pig. It was a model. But, no, it was really cool. I thought we'd only be there for, I don't know, 30 minutes. I was like, that'll be it. And you kept wanting to go, I don't want to miss any. Like, at one point, you missed, like, three, and you're like, I want to go back. And I was like, really? And I was like, okay, if you want to go look. Yeah, it was huge. There was a lot of really cool... The thing that impressed me was the quality of the... How they managed to keep some of those vehicles. Some of them are like nearly 100 years old, but they look like they were brand new.
Restored them.
They must have done, but it was amazing to have that many vehicles. But like the John Deere's, it was like, here's the 36th year, 37, 38, 39. Sometimes they had two from the same. The fact that they managed to have that amount of material in there, it was really cool. So anyway, we did miss then game two of the doubleheader, JJ. So as you don't know what happened, go ahead, tell us.
First inning, both of them were tied with one run.
Yep.
The second inning, 3-1 Holy Family. Mm-hmm. And then in the fifth, it was 5-1 Holy Family. That was it.
And after six innings, which makes me think then that rain kicked in. And remember when we left the museum, it was really heavy rain at that point. The game time for this was literally 1 hour and 18 minutes. So at that point, though, you can call a game if there's only one inning to go. If it's heavy rain, one team's leading, you can call a game at that point. Six hits for Holy Family, two for Virginia State. No errors in this one. But the game didn't start till four. So if we had stayed, we would have waited for an hour just to see an hour and 18 minute game. So I think we actually made the right choice in actually leaving for this one. Do you have the scoring summary? Did I leave you that?
Yeah. So first inning said Leo doubled RBI, Turner out at second, center field to shortstop,
to catcher,
Z Morales scored.
Yep. And then bottom of the first?
Jay Crawley singled, RBI, D-Hawk advanced to second, Jay Pooler scored.
So that was 1-1, and then in the second, Holy Family, Coma doubled, two RBIs, Bucci scored, and Chris scored. And then in the fifth, Turner doubled, two RBIs, Lombardo scored, and Coma scored. So not really many scoring plays in this one, just the four. I did notice Coma was particularly impressive. Three at-bats, three hits, two RBIs, so he went 3-for-3 in the second game. And I think I left you the Holy Family pitching line as well, because it was particularly impressive.
Yeah.
Murphy?
Yeah, Murphy. He five innings pitched. Two hits, one run, one earned run, two bases on balls, eight strikeouts.
That's pretty impressive.
Nothing.
Yeah, eight strikeouts in five innings. Obviously, he didn't... that was all he needed to do. Like, they didn't need to go any more than that. But, yeah, that was... I don't know if it lists how many pitches he threw. But, yeah, that was particularly impressive. And, anyway, that was it. And I actually told us when you got home, because I was like, oh, my gosh, we keep finding these special games. This was a really special game, and we didn't even realize it. So, start telling us about Holy Family University, JJ. Because you asked me about them. I was like, I don't really know. I was like, I'm not familiar with them, to be honest.
Okay. So it is a private Catholic university in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, founded in 1954, and has four schools, arts and sciences, business and professional studies, education, nursing, and health sciences. Its main campus is in Philadelphia, in the northern section of the city.
Now, I was actually looking at the Holy Family page, and I was looking at the coaches. So can you tell us about Kyle Davis?
He was hired as Holy Family University's first ever baseball coach in June 2023.
All right, so can you figure out then why this is so significant a game?
His first game?
This was not just his first game. This is the university's first ever baseball game in history. Oh. First ever baseball coach. This is their first ever game of baseball. Whoa. And they actually won. Both games. Now, I don't know what their record is this weekend because I haven't looked, because originally we were going to record on Thursday, but we didn't get around to it. Holy Family, JJ, is the only team in NCAA history who has a 100% winning record right now, as far as I know. They're 2-0. So I was like, oh my gosh, there were quite a few fans there, and now that makes sense. If this is your first ever game, you want to see the first ever... There's only one chance to see a first ever game. So I went back through the stats, and I can tell you some of Holy Family's firsts. Brian Comer got the first Holy Family walk. This was the first game.
Then the first
Brian Comer got the first Holy Family steal. Stefan Leo got the first hit. He got the first double, and he also got the first RBIs with 3 for Holy Family. I think that was that first inning.
What about first home run?
Hold on. Brian Homer got the first run for Holy Family, and Martinez got the first hit by pitch. I don't know, that's such a thing that you'd want. And Z Morales got the first ever single. We do know from the pitching stats from that first game. Not Murphy, that was the second game. It was Bing. Bing had the first win as a pitcher, and I can't tell you who the first home run hitter is because
no one
got a home run in that game. Okay. So I don't know.
What, first strikeout?
It must have been that pitcher. It would have been Bing. Bing would have had all those. He would have had the first strikeout.
First walk.
First, from the pitching side, etc.
First pitch ever.
But isn't that cool? I did not know when we went to that game. That was their first ever game they'd ever played. So I was like, that's kind of cool. Now, it's interesting because I've started making a list of potential places we could go to. And there's one coming up in Baltimore next year, and it's going to be their first ever game. Because I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, Jay's definitely going to want to do a first ever game for this team.
Let me see.
And I can't remember who it is because obviously they're not a team right now. And then this came up. I was like, oh my gosh, I do not remember. I will have to go back and look in my notes. I'm hoping my notes are good. But yeah, I'm kind of glad I got sick now that previous week, because otherwise it would have just been a regular VSU game. This was significant from Holy Family. Now, I'm going to ask you, JJ, and you can say yes or no.
I wanted them to win, too.
You did want them to win. Now we know that this is their first season. Do you want to provide regular updates on how Holy Family are doing throughout the season, on their inaugural season?
Yeah.
Alright, I can keep a track on that. Now, after we left the Tractor Museum, I did find one other place called the Trapezium Brewhouse. And I like trapezium because that's the English word. You would say trapezoid. But I was like, I saw that they had pizza. I know you like pizza. And we particularly like pizza that's well made. Yeah. So I thought we'd do that. So it's been open since June 2016. Our Petersburg location is our main production location. Housing a 30 BBL brew house. Don't know what that is. In the tap room, we serve Neapolitan style pizzas from our brick oven, along with apps. That must be appetizers and desserts. Our draft list features a variety of year-round favorites, as well as a selection of ever-changing special small batches. We were only going for food. We'd already had drinks because we got them in the car, so we got a couple of waters and we ordered straight away. You want to tell us about the pizza?
So we got the Boneville Deluxe.
Uh-huh.
It had red sauce, sausage, bacon, pepperoni, prosciutto.
Prosciutto, yeah, I think that's right.
5 cheese blend.
It was good, right?
Yeah.
It was really good.
And now, they had darts and a bunch of other games.
Okay, that was the other part that I went to. So when we got there, because I asked, I was like, do you have any spare darts? And she's like, yeah, but you got to give, like, your driver's license because people have been stealing. And I was like, that's fine, we can do that. So we did, and they brought the darts. And yeah, you've never played darts before. I hadn't really even realized.
I played baseball darts.
Yeah, not quite the same. So any particularly memorable moments? I know you enjoyed it.
I hit a bullseye.
You did get a bullseye, yeah?
I got...
Remember your top score?
80-something.
It was 80-something, yeah. And you were working...
I got a 22.
There was a piece of chalk, and you were kind of working it out on the side. You did. I had a few when I kept missing the 20, because I thought I was good.
And I got a 20.
And it's a while since I've played, and I was really shaky at the start. I was not throwing good. I showed you some of my tactics I used to use as well. Like, I used to throw on the left-hand side, where there's big enough 14, 11, and stuff. And then if I can hit that triple...
I kind of just like to throw it, see if I get any.
I did get 100, though. I did get a triple 20. And also, I tried to tell you how you play in real. And I was like, give me a number between, I don't know what I said, like 1 and 40 or something. And you gave me something. So I showed you had to finish on a double.
I said 32.
You said 32. My first dart was not what I was aiming for. I can't remember what I was aiming for. I think I must have hit something kind of big, because I went for something to leave myself with double 4. And I actually hit double 4. So I was 100% on doubles, which was not my level of accuracy at all. Now, what else was going on while the darts was going on? Because
a Virginia, a UVA game, and then a UNC game.
There was.
It was really low scoring.
It was very low scoring. Now, we actually left before the end of the game. At one point, wasn't there like 3 minutes? No, it wasn't 3 minutes. It was 8 minutes left in the first half.
It was like 6-12.
UVA is known for being low scoring. But then UNC started to score. And, yeah, UVA were doing terrible. Anyway, I did look up what the final score was. Because you'd ask me, like, what's the lowest score?
It was UNC 54-44.
Yeah, so UNC they got 10 didn't get more. Many, but they 54 is not normally a winning score. It was their first win in 8 attempts at UVA. They've really struggled. UVA is a really good defensive team. And I was expecting it to be low scoring, but not that low scoring. But yeah, UVA normally manages to grind out enough points. And the last thing I wrote down for you is 44 actually made the top 100 lowest scores of all time. And I think it was Division I basketball. But anyway, I left a fact for you.
Okay.
Because I knew you were going to ask me about, so what is the lowest score?
Okay. So, on February 2nd, 2019, number 23, NC State, lost to number 12, Virginia Tech, 47-24. Mm-hmm. And it was the lowest scoring performance by a ranked Division I college basketball team in the shot clock era, which is...
It said since the 1985-86. Yeah. So they did it later than the NBA did, I think, from what I can tell.
The Wolfpack were 12 for 28.
They were not 12. How did they get the lowest score?
Two.
There you go.
2 for 28 from three-point range, which is 7.1%. And nine,
that's terrible.
9 for 54, which is 16.7% from the field in the loss.
Those figures are abysmal.
That's trash.
That's terrible. I knew you asked me at the time what's the lowest score.
How
I
do you
said,
just
I don't,
not play that good?
I don't know. And they were ranked, weren't they? Yeah, they were ranked number 23 as well. So I don't know. Unless Virginia Tech's defense was really good. I don't know. But you did ask me, and I said the lowest score would have been from the era when they didn't have a shot clock. Because you could literally just keep bouncing the ball.
Because people just shot.
They just wouldn't shoot.
Then
wouldn't even shoot. They would take a lead, and then they just wouldn't shoot.
They would just shoot it and just keep the ball for the rest of the game.
Yeah, they just wouldn't get it. You had to try and get the ball from them. Anyway, I did look up the NBA's lowest scores. Now, I'm actually going to tell you the second, and I'm going to tell you the lowest, okay? Because it had, like, the list. The second lowest were two teams that don't even exist now. The Detroit Falcons, 33. The Washington Capitals, 50. That was from November 2nd, 1946. That's 83 points combined.
That's the non-shot clock era.
That is the non-shot era. Now, 83 points is the second lowest total. All right, would you like to guess on what the lowest total is then of all time?
Like 3-20.
There's a big difference between 83 and 23. Well, you're ruining the stat. On November 22nd, 1950, the Fort Wayne Pistons defeated the reigning champions of the Minneapolis Lakers 19-18 in the match that would go down in history as the game with the lowest score, 37 combined points. Like, Detroit Falcons had 33 in the loss. These two had 37 combined. That's a big difference between the second and the first. At that time, the Lakers were too strong for the Pistons, and coach Murray Mendenhall then devised a strategy. If they had the ball possession for the entire time, Minneapolis wouldn't have a chance to score. So that's literally what we just talked about. So that's why they kept it so low. They were just trying to eke out a quick win and get in the lead and then just not do anything. So this game was 1950. In 1954, the NBA instituted the 24-second clock, as was quite necessary, because that's absolutely ridiculous that you can get away with that. All right, Coppin State update time, JJ. So we did not go to the game on Friday, obviously, because you were in school, even though it was your birthday. So go ahead, tell us about the Friday's game.
So it was St. Peter's versus Coppin. First inning, 2-2. Mm-hmm. Fifth inning, 3-2, Coppin.
Got a lead.
Sixth inning, it was 5-3.
Uh-huh.
Coppin. The seventh inning, it was 5-4, mm-hmm. Coppin. In the eighth inning, it was 8-4, Coppin. Then in the ninth, it was 10-8.
And I told you that Coppin were winning. I was like, this would be a nice little birthday present. And it didn't work out that way. Oh, my gosh. To give up 6 runs in the ninth after making such a good start. 12 hits for St. Peter's, 8 for Coppin State, 3 errors by St. Peter's, just 1 by Coppin State. Now we know some of these players better, JJ. This is our third season. Like, my heart just went out when I saw that John Neal took the loss. I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, he's such a nice guy. I was like, oh, my gosh. I can only imagine how bad he feels at this point. Like, this, because they're still at this point now, they're 0-4 for the season. This is a team that they actually swept last year in their first game.
They just do good in the first inning, then they just get too aggressive.
I don't know about that. They haven't been so far. They haven't been leading games at all. This is, might be the first time they took a lead.
They just lose it in the last innings.
But they've also had games where they've done the same thing as well. Like, it's an exciting team to watch, but I felt so bad for the team. 2 hours 54, 75 people in attendance. And I don't think we need to go too much into this. Nico Felber opened the pitching. 5.2 innings, just 3 earned runs. That's much more than Nico Felber that we recognize. I'm glad that he had a quality start. John Neal came in 2.1 innings, 6 earned runs, and Reagan Rivera came in for the last inning, and he just gave up 1 run. So I think John Neal started the ninth, couldn't get out of it, so they brought Reagan in. Yeah, so they took another loss. Saturday's game, obviously, we didn't go to, JJ, because we were down in VSU, as we already just mentioned. So you want to tell us about Saturday's game?
All right, Saturday's game. Second inning, 2-0 Coppin. Third inning, 4-2 St. Peter's. In the fifth, it was 5-3 St. Peter's. In the fifth, it was 6-3 St. Peter's. In the seventh, it was 6-4 St. Peter's. Then
That's the final. 11 hits for St. Peter's, 5 for Coppin State, no errors. Start time was 1 o'clock, 2 hours and 51 minutes, 75 people in attendance. And, just couldn't get it done on this one. The opener, Alec Elgez, 4.1 innings, 6 earned runs. Jackson Montgomery came in, 3.2 innings, no earned runs. Jackson Montgomery was the person who we mentioned who was getting quite a few strikeouts last week. And I just noticed here he got 4 more strikeouts in those 3.2 innings as well. And then Caden Straley came in the last inning, 1 inning, no hits, no runs. Actually, Jackson Montgomery, I just saw, he gave up 4 hits, but no runs. So, and 1 strikeout for Caden as well. And Sunday's game we couldn't go to because we didn't do a birthday party for you this year, but we did do something special for you on the Sunday. So do you want to talk about what you did last Sunday? And if you don't remember, this could be really embarrassing.
Well, last Sunday I went to an iFly in...
Yep.
I went to Gaithersburg. An iFly just south of Germantown, kind of.
It was in Gaithersburg.
Yeah, it was in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Mm. It was pretty fun. I got to do the high flight. So they brought me up.
So what's the difference between a regular flight and a high flight?
Regular one, you're like 3 to 5 feet off.
Uh-huh.
But in and the high fly, you're like 15 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then they spin you around.
Uh-huh.
Like a bunch.
Yeah. So you got to do two of those. I got to check with Mommy. Like, we couldn't get the video. Like, we ordered the video as well. We filmed our own video, but it was still... I'd like to see what they got. They probably have a good camera in there. Yeah,
it's
no.
kind of like... It's kind of okay.
Yeah. For people that don't know, it's basically a big fan that's underneath you. There's a safety net where the instructor can kind of walk on and hold you. But, yeah, he makes sure you don't, like, float up or something. But they can control the power. Like, I don't know if you noticed on some of them, when they were going higher, like, he gave the thumbs up to the person who was controlling it, and then they could go. And then after you guys had done that, the instructor did, like, his own demonstration. Because after you've done a few of these, you can do more. Oh, my God. He was like Spider-Man. Like, he suddenly went whoosh, like, or Batman, I guess.
And
he went, like,
also,
straight up to the top.
He was going, like, Superman, like, along the wall.
Yeah,
he was
going around the...
And was spinning
it reminded me of, like, have you seen the motorbikes that kind of go around the wall of death? It was like that.
Going
he was
from the bottom spinning up.
It was so cool. Like, my camera trying to film him, he was so quick on the first one. Like, he'd already shot up before I could even get him. But, yeah, so there's,
then
like, different...
He came down in the Spider-Man pose.
Yeah. Like, there's different levels, kind of like swimming. Like, you learn your basics, like, you learn to paddle, I guess, first, and then you have to learn how to hold your breath, and then you do, like, I don't know, 10 meters. This had kind of the same thing. Like, on the first one, you have to learn, like, the body positions, and then on the second one, then you can start doing it perhaps on your back as well, because normally you got your stomach going forward, and then you can do... So there was different ones that you could do. Not on your one, because it was your first time doing it, but it looked really cool. It looked really cool. I thought it was, there was a, oh, you had to come out at one point. Was it your helmet was too loose or something?
It was too loose on the first one.
Oh, okay, because you come out and I was like, uh-oh, it didn't look like you were scared or anything. Because obviously it's too loud with the thing. In fact, that computer person, he's got like a screen that tells you like the most common things, like you need to separate your legs a little bit further, you need to keep your head up, or he was giving little, it was really interesting just to watch. I can only imagine how cool it was to actually be in there.
I mean, it's like a thick, like, jumpsuit that you have to put on.
You're like an
and
astronaut.
And then, like, when the wind blows, like, you can't really feel it.
Uh-huh.
Like, you just go with it.
Yep.
But, like, on your arms, like on the, like, on your, like, forearm area,
mm-hmm.
like, you can feel it there. Like, you can definitely feel it there.
Mm-hmm.
And... Like when you go up, it was like you could just look down and see everybody.
Oh sure, yeah. Oh, it was amazing. It was really cool. I'm glad that we got to do that. And then we went out for lunch. You wanted to go to Olive Garden because you like their breadsticks. So we got to do that.
It's good breadsticks.
It was funny. I saw somebody on Twitter. Oh, no, it wasn't Twitter. I was watching IWTV this morning. It was the life of one called Manders. I don't think you know Steve Manders. He's a wrestler. But they were in his house, and they were watching wrestling. And then they panned the camera across. It's like a documentary style. And there was one of the guys. He's like, what you doing? He's like, I'm eating my breadsticks. He had breadsticks from Olive Garden as well. So it's not just you that likes the breadsticks. I think there's a lot of people that do.
Wait, I saw this one video on YouTube where they're at Olive Garden. They're like, the breadsticks are cold. So then the guy grabs one, he bites it, and says, no, it's not, then puts it back.
Hmm. Okay.
And then it titled, Only at Olive Garden.
Okay. Do you want to tell us about the game?
Sure. So.
This is an important one. This is our team right now.
Okay.
Copping 0-5 at this point. And you don't want to, I can do it if you want, if you don't want to do it.
Okay. First inning, 4-0, St. Peter's.
Mm-hmm.
Second inning, 5-0, St. Peter's.
All right, so not a great start at this point, but all right, it gets better, thankfully.
Then in the fourth inning, it was, let me do math real quick.
You don't need to do math, you're just going to do 5
7
out of
2. 7-8.
So Coppin got, so Coppin, we talked about Coppin can also have those big innings, and this was one of those cases.
They got 8.
Yeah, 8 in the inning, okay. All right, so 8-7 after 4.
In the 5th inning, it was 9-8, St. Peter's.
Yep.
In the 6th, it was 10-9, mm-hmm. St. Peter's. Mm-hmm. The 7th inning, it was tied at 11-11. Mm-hmm. Then in the 9th inning...
No runs in the 8th.
Mm-hmm. In the 9th inning, 1 for St. Peter, 2 mm-hmm. for Coppin State. 13-12 win.
I was going to say, if you're not keeping up with the math, 13-12. So it was tied going into the 9th. St. Peter's got a run, and it must have been feeling like, oh my gosh, not again. And they did it. The boys did it. 12 hits on 12 runs and 13 hits on 13 runs. Two errors by Coppin, one from St. Peter's. 10 at 75. Game was just over 3 hours. I'm not surprised with it being that many. With that being so many runs, do you want to talk about any of the individual batting performances for Coppin State? I'm going to read some from St. Peter's, so give you some time. Tyler Cotton, the catcher, had went 4-for-5 with 4 RBIs. That was probably the standout one for me. And Tyler Smith went 2-for-4, and that would probably be the second most important one.
So Anthony DiVittorio, Chris Marte, Bryce Thompson, and Sam Nieves all got 2 runs each.
They did. They all went 2-for-3. Yeah, it was kind of, the runs were kind of spread out, which is good. That's what you want from a team. You want everybody hitting, because then that makes the pitchers nervous, because it's like, uh-oh, now the next person could hit. Coppin State pitchers, Christian Pareca, came in 3 innings, 7 earned runs, because I was watching this at the start. I was like, oh, that's not the, that was not the start he was looking for sure. 5 bases on balls, so there was obviously some control issues there, but 4 strikeouts as well. So it was really a bit hit and miss on this one. Jaden Hurd came in 2.1 innings, 3 earned runs, and Reagan Rivera got the win, 3.2 innings in relief, just 4 hits, 2 earned runs, and 3 strikeouts. So they're finally on the scoreboard. I do have the Coppin State individual scores for this one, JJ. So Marte homered to center field in the fourth. That made the score 7-2. They were 7-0 down at this point, so not looking good. And also in the fourth, Bryce Thompson doubled to left field, and Moore scored. Sam Nieves singled up the middle, and Thompson scored. This is now 7-4. Kay Holmes singled through the left side. DiVittorio advanced to second. Is it Acevedo? I still don't know how you say it. Acevedo scored, and Nieves scored, so 7-6. And then Moore doubled from the infield line, 2 RBIs. Marte advanced to third. Holmes scored, and DiVittorio scored, and that's what gave him the lead, 8-7. Moore reached on a fielding error. Somebody advanced to third, and Marte scored. An infield fielding error, and you managed to get to third? Wow. I don't know if it was a throw and it missed and then they couldn't get it quickly. I don't know.
It was like, I don't know, maybe they were throwing it to first or something.
Could be. That's the only thing I can think of. They're 10-9 down at this point. In the seventh, DiVittorio got hit by a pitch. Black advanced to second. Nieves advanced to third, and Thompson scored. So that's obviously good. So it must have been a bases loaded hit by pitch, which obviously they wouldn't want to do. They're down 11-10 now. Holmgren grounded into a double play, but DiVittorio advanced to second. Black is out on the play, but Nieves scored, so that tied it up at 11. Tyler Colton homered to left center in the top of the ninth, and I'm sure that must have been a horrible feeling, 12-11. And then in the bottom, DiVittorio tripled down the right field line, and Black scored. And then Damon Gaither singled to center field, and DiVittorio scored. So the walk-off hit from Damon, 13-12. Coppin's got a win. There was supposed to be a game on Wednesday, and we had a lot of rain, and it got rained out. It was against George Washington at Coppin State. Now, I don't know what happened this weekend. We were busy because you had your first ever Virginia Junior Disc Golf Tournament, and you did very well. You came in second. You were 3 shots off the lead, and Mason did his third one, and he got his first win, but he moved up from the 15s division to the 18s division because he just turned 16. And then today we had our monthly tags tournament, so we were busy anyway. On my schedule, I had written down Coppin State versus Yale. And I don't know what happened, but it's not on the schedule anymore, so I don't know if I copied it down wrong. I don't know what happened. There was no mention of it being cancelled, so I don't know what happened. I did see the next but that's weird not to have a game at a weekend so early in the thing. And the next game coming up is against Navy in Annapolis. I can't. It's a Wednesday. We can't. There's no way. There's no way we can make it, unfortunately.
I like Navy, though.
I know.
Because, like, you can get everywhere.
I understand.
Except for, like, outfield.
I understand. Now, we had a lot to talk about this one, so I didn't do too much. But I did see, when I went to look at the baseball stats this week, something from college that's probably very important. I don't know if you know this person or not, Caitlin Clark. Do you recognize that name at all? All right, Caitlin Clark surpassed Pete Maravich as the all-time leading scorer in men's or women's college basketball as Iowa bested number 2 Iowa State 93-83, and that was today, Sunday, March 3rd. She was just 2 points from Maravich's mark at the start of the game, and she got the points from free throws. Caitlin finished with 35 points. Now, I don't know if you recognize Pete Maravich.
No.
He's actually the person that's the NBA logo. I believe that's Pete Mara. If I'm wrong, somebody will let us know, but I might be wrong. I'm pretty sure that's it. But yeah, he was the highest scorer in college. Oh, actually, that might be. Actually, that is wrong. That's the wrong person. It's somebody West. Yeah, I got that completely wrong. No, it's not. No, I got that. I think is it Jerry West? I don't know. Anyway, Pete Maravich is a well-known player, not from my era, which is why I don't know him as well as I should. But yeah, Caitlin Clark is a very good basketball player. Her cards are already going for crazy amounts of money in the collecting scene, and she will definitely be the number one pick when we get there. Now, name game time. First of all, I meant to do it at the start of the show and I forgot. We had technical issues last week, so you did not manage to get who it was. So I said, hey, I can't repeat this because you already know who it is now. We'll put it out there, see if anyone responds. At High Five Tom, congratulations, you did get it. I think it was C. Dylan S. The C was really Charles, but we know him more as Casey. And it was Casey Stengel. So congratulations to High Five Tom on getting that. And when Jackson and I talked, I was like, would you rather give a clue or receive a clue? And you said give a clue. So I was like, all right, in future then, what I'm going to do is we'll put one out there. If anyone who's listening knows what it is, then you guys get to play along as well. This one that I have for the people really is how well have they been listening to today's episode. But all right, go ahead, JJ. Who you got for me? We're only doing one of them, so pick which one you want.
Okay. So all I could find was their first and last name.
So no middle name? So I don't have anything then. So you're literally just giving me initials at this point? Oh, yeah. Boy.
E.G.
E.G.? Well, it's not that the middle name's particularly helpful anyway. And this is a baseball player?
Yeah.
My first thought was Eric Gates, but he's a footballer. Is this a current player?
No.
Okay, so it's an old-time player.
A while ago.
I'm not really coming up with it. It's not Earl Weaver. I was trying to think of names beginning with E. Is there any connection to Baltimore?
No.
Okay.
Do you want to know the team?
Yeah, go ahead. Give me the team.
I think it was the Browns. No,
Browns? You just told me it was baseball.
No.
Oh, it could be the St. Louis Browns.
No, it's the
Indians?
Oh, yeah, it is the Browns. Yeah.
Oh, I don't exactly know who it is. I can tell you what number he wore as well. He wore number 3/4. Or was it 1/4?
I think it was like 8.
It was a fraction, wasn't it, for sure? It might have been 8. It's Eddie Goodell.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I don't know what his middle name is. That's not even a proper baseball. He had one at bat in his major league career.
He still played, though.
And he's on base percent. Kind of like how they introduced the shot clock to stop people cheating, and I'm doing air quotes right now, in basketball. They introduced similar rules after Eddie Goodell as well to stop you just bringing in. Because he knelt down pretty much. I think he said his strike zone was like 1 inch or something. It's like, they just couldn't get it. So they stopped that. Now, the one that we have then for the listeners this week is A. Benjamin B. This is not a current player either, but it based on Jackson's full of the face. I can tell you off air. This has more to do with how well have you been listening to today's episode more than anything else. All right, JJ, outro music. I think that's it.
Okay. I think I know who it is.
I'm sure you do. I hope it worked. I hope it recorded this week.